Well, folks, I'm excited to have Lieutenant Colonel retired Pete Chambers join the Army in 1983, served for a career spanning 39 years. That's a long time of service, and he's still serving our country. After his first honorable discharge, he had a break in service to complete college and medical school at the University of New England. He completed a primary care residency and worked as an emergency room physician and was commissioned as a peace officer, serving his community as a SWAT team physician and sheriff's deputy. Absolutely amazing. It's great to have you here today. We've got your website up, drpetechambers.com. It's in the description box below, folks, if you want to click on there and learn more about him. But we're going to find out more as we go through this broadcast today. I'm looking forward to it. So how's it going out there in your world?
LT, it's an amazing world we're living in, and I never thought we'd be in these times, but I'm absorbing every bit of it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you've been involved in so much. I've watched and looked over several things that you've been involved in, the biggest being the border. Many folks are interested in what's going on there. We had this talk about, some of the things that we see going on. I see a lot of videos that are pulled. Folks are doing the best they can to go down there outside of the mainstream media to give us just clean videos of what we see coming across our border. And a big one that's hit us recently are the folks that are coming in from China that look like they're military with haircuts, other countries like other countries throughout Africa, those different countries coming in. And we're just, we're seeing that, but you're there firsthand and you're working with a group to help all of this, play out on the border and bring awareness and more. What are you involved in there completely? Like, can you just give us a rundown?
Sure, real quick. I took off my uniform May of last year with the Texas National Guard, where I was the task force surgeon for Operation Lone Star. At that time, about almost 4,000 or 5,000 troops that we had on the border. We went up to 10,000, back down to about 3,000 or 4,000 right now. As a task force surgeon, I was up and down 1,250 miles of Texas border, visiting troops on every listening post, observation post along the way. And, I pulled shifts too, because guys get hot, they need relief, and good officers did that for me in the past, and that's what I did. But I learned the border back of my hand and saw the optics versus the reality. I think that's really what got me, after I got out of the military, to go back down and, in a humanitarian sense, really help local landowners, folks in town, just shore up their comfort levels, if you will, with what's going on, so there wasn't a fear. You know, we fear that which we do not understand. So my goal in that was to do that. However, some great people came along and said, hey, why don't you turn this into something real? And so I started getting retired military like me, and we do rotations on the border, the Remnant A team. And that's what we're doing now. And it's a labor of love. It's work, but I don't have to salute anybody anymore. I'm my own boss. Yeah.
It's interesting. Like we were talking about in the Marine Corps, I'm so used to calling those that in the officer side, sir, you asked me to call you doc, and love that. And you're also a Mustang. You've enlisted and officer side, correct?
Yes, sir. I think that made me a better officer, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I wanted to show you this this video I have here, Texas punching back at Biden administration. Yeah. They're putting up storage containers. Do you know anything about this?
Absolutely, 100%. I was there when the triple strand concertina went up, the rolls of hot, barbed wire, essentially. Concertina is what we call it. And that is in Eagle Pass. And that right there is actually the fence that Governor Abbott had us start. I was there that day that fence started. And it took us a while to put that in. About 7 miles of that is sitting there at between Del Rio and Eagle Pass. So, yes, that's fully aware of what's happening now. The feds are coming in, and not all of the guys on the ground that work for Border Patrol are like that, but there are certain elements within that take commands and don't question illegal orders, and they're cutting the fence. So it's I would call it a cold war between the federal government and the state of Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you get involved in all of this? I mean, that's the big question for me. It's like, how did it just happen overnight? You just walked in and you said, I need to help with the border. And then you just started something on your own. How'd that work out?
Yeah. Kind of interesting. I took off my uniform after I was a whistleblower, and that had nothing to do with the border itself, but the mandates for the vaccines. And, there's a there's a game we call rock, paper, scissors. Well, we played rock, paper, rank, and I lost. It was a two-star general, and I was just a lieutenant colonel. So I could not do informed consents anymore. When I did that, I went ahead and put in my retirement paperwork. I had developed friendships all along the border with Border Patrol guys, you know, that really want to do their jobs. You know, Department of Public Safety, Texas Rangers, these relationships are real. And then the landowners. And so I just couldn't, you know, walk away from that. I had my disability pay, my retirement pay. So, you know, I'm in a place where I can do this. And so I basically went back down and just as a one-man show with my dog and my horse, I got a retired Border Patrol horse. We went down and just started helping local landowners. And just to the model that the military uses, especially in Special Forces, the unit I came from was the Green Berets. We find, fix, finish, exploit, analyze, and disseminate. That's how we quickly cycle, you know, we target things. I can't do the finishing work. Obviously, I'm a civilian, but I can find and fix locations. And then in a neighborhood watch sort of way, advise local law enforcement, et cetera, as to what's happening, which has been pretty decent. They've worked with us. They like the information. These are extra eyes out there. They trust us. You know, we're not really nearly running around, you know, playing, you know, lack of a better word, militia. It's not that. This is just fact finding and truth, and then helping them shore up their 6-man detachments, if you will, and some of the sheriff's offices down there, pretty small departments.
Right. Right. And so, I understand that you don't do this, like, I wouldn't put it that way, but all of the folks that are helping you out, you gain support by going to the border mm-hmm. with these folks. And do you, how does that scene look? Like, I just picture you guys going down there with weapons or something. Like, can you explain that scene for us? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, well, you know, how does it work? Yeah, when you're at the border and you're out in the back country, you know, you have to have something to protect yourself. You never know what you're going to run across. But we're not kitted up. We're not wearing, you know, body armor and all that stuff. Primarily, most of what we do is just talk to landowners. We go out, and for me, how it started was just looking at what I call game trails, looking at the pathways that were cutting through their fences, allowing cattle or high fences, exotic animals, to get out and to, you know, use that as a place to go around a lot of the checkpoints. And that's the way we found it was they were going around some of the Border Patrol checkpoints. And when right. that happens, you know, that's where the nefarious actors are going to go. If they're a honest family unit coming across the border, you saw the pictures there. Those are the ones that aren't going to try to hide. The ones that are cutting across fences, you know, landowners, individuals that are led by a coyote, which, you know, a guy that's paid a lot of money to bring these higher value individuals across. That's where you'll find your Chinese, some of your actors from Venezuela. I always get concerned when I know the Iranian-Venezuela connection. Could right. there be Hezbollah involved? I haven't personally found them, but I've seen the data that came from Todd Bensman, who's, you know, immigration think tank out of Dallas here, expert on this stuff. So I take that information and I try to find that. But it's a needle in a needle stack.
Hmm. Yeah, so when you... when I see the folks coming across, are there, you know, we talked about this when I bring it up in my podcast, what are the things that folks can do here to support you? Like we hear what's going on. We mm-hmm. see all that's going on, but we get a lot of questions like, how can I help? And do we get involved? Do we show up, you know, with our boots and our horse and our guns and, you know, what types of support are you bringing? I mean, yeah. do you help people also that are coming across the border that might have been hurt? I mean, how does that all operate?
Absolutely. And there are groups already down here like this. I mean, that's, you know, the Dr. Vickers is a group. He has a bunch of folks over there in Falfurrias, which is closer to the Rio Grande Valley. They've been doing it for 20 years. You know, that's where they live. And yeah. they've been doing it 20 years. And they get out in the backcountry, four-wheelers, pickup trucks, horses, and they're just trying to find people that are lost, that are dehydrated. There's nothing humanitarian about this. So those kind of groups have been here for a long time. I'm only doing that, but in the sense that I'm taking it to a different level in that I'm truly trying, and we're working on legislation to actually get deputized some of our guys that have been former deputies like myself to say, hey, Sheriff, let's deputize some of these guys so that we can be hands for you. Because, you know, for example, Kinney County, Sheriff Coe, he's got 6 deputies. I mean, he's got 40 miles of border and he's got 6 deputies. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And so in time, I believe with legislation, we can do that, but we've got to build the rapport and the, it's just like us doing unconventional warfare, except this now is domestic, you know, defense.
Right.
Internal defense. You know, we think about foreign internal defense as a special operations technique or methodology. This is domestic internal defense.
Got it. Yeah. So in a sense, do you have any type of story that you know, touch you personally on this whole thing with the border, something that, that would, you know, resonate with the folks that are listening in?
There are many stories, but I'll tell you the one that got me the most, and a father of two daughters and a son, all grown up now and out in the world. Two sisters, this would be in Roma, Texas, across from a town called Miguel Alemán, the most highly cartel contested piece of real estate on that border in the Rio Grande Valley. There's always fighting on the south side trying to take that real estate. It's just a low water crossing. It's easy to get across. Two little girls, about 3 a.m. I was in uniform at the time. Really what kind of set me on this course as to what I was going to do when I got out. And just happened to see at one point, in one place, at one time, in one night, two gentlemen pushing these two girls across the border with their hands on their shoulders, just pushing them. And I just said, dads, don't touch your kids that way. Now, this is a point, bear in mind, about 900 people came across that night. And that was a typical for that point during that time of the year. I mean, it was typical. So I just told my guys, I'm like, bring those kids over here and get those guys over there and find out where they're from. And even though that's not my job, is, you know, looking for the bad actors. But in this case, it was just a discernment that I needed to intervene. And the two guys hadn't done their homework. They were not from the same country. The girls finally, you know, said, look, that's not our fathers. You know, our family's in Atlanta and where you want to come across to find them. 7 and 8 years old. Of course, this is a common story. And the look on their face when they realized, and the picture's on my website, and I have their eyes blacked out because it just protect them. But two little girls from Guatemala, the look on their faces as just the tears, and they knew that at that moment they were safe and just grabbing us. And that one right there is what, thinking of my daughters, it just got me. So that was one of the, you know, I guess a win. I handed them directly to, you know, the Border Patrol agents who made sure that, look, these are not a family unit. Do not put them with those two guys. And they did the homework on those guys and found out they were affiliated with a cartel. So that took a little while to find out, but it was a good pickup. It was a right place, the right moment for those two children. But that's just one place, one night, one time. What's the rest of it when there's 86,000 reported children missing from the border that have come across?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at this. I mean, it's playing out daily in our social media world and more. I mean, Carrie Lake put this one out. More than 5,000 illegal aliens are on their way to Arizona. Mm-hmm. The leader of the caravan is openly telling everyone that Biden has lost control of the border. So the world's taking advantage of his weakness and law abiding Americans are paying consequences. So when you see pictures like this and hear this, you know, these type of things, how do you address that with your team and how do you move forward with this type of info?
Right. And so I've seen that. I came face to face with 50 National Guardsmen and 17,000 Haitians a year and a half ago in Del Rio. And we had to hold them under the bridge, so to speak, the point of entry so that they could be processed. So 400 highway patrolmen showed up and a bunch of other National Guards came in. So we've seen that. And that's overwhelming the system. And I love people. I mean, I've taken care of kids from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, you name it, Africa, across the Sahel. We've done this, and humans are humans, and we love all people. But the system, when it's overwhelmed, allows for chaos. And in chaos, there are seams and gaps that the enemy, whoever that may be, whatever nefarious actor, uses to come through the lines. And what I'm seeing now, personally, especially in that Venezuelan group, is a lot of guys that have just come out of prison. So you'll see guys coming in with a lot of facial tats and things. And I know, you know, it's profiling, but you got to, you know, when you see an AK-47 on a guy's face, you kind of have to say, well, he's not really, you know, Mr. Rogers.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've got more. I mean, these videos come out. I'm just showing you because this is the stuff that I have to deal with. I see a lot. I see these folks with the videos and they're saying, look, this Tucson airport, every flight's full of illegals. So they're sending them somewhere. And I've noticed a lot of folks going off to the cities like Chicago and New York. And I've said this before and mentioned it, but I don't know if you agree, but have they, there seems to be a part of this where folks are sent in to the cities where they vote and they have nothing to do with the border, but they vote and say, oh, we want all of these borders to be open. Yet you tell them, okay, we'll just fill up your house with all of them so you can take care of them because they're part of your home now. And then, so they've gotten so many. Now you see folks in Chicago, New York, they're upset because all of a sudden they can't handle the amount that are coming in. And I told you, I just feel like sometimes it's a biblical thing where they are tired of their manna because the Israelites were walking through the desert and they said, we want meat. And so God gave them so much meat, they were choking on it. And it was, so sometimes I look at it that way. I mean, how do you feel about
that? That is absolutely, you know, we had that conversation and I agree with you on that. And I also know that, you know, this type of technique, this global technique of human osmotic pressure waves pushing people across is a technique that's been done for ages. You know, let my people go. I mean, it's a technique that sometimes overwhelms a system. Now, and not necessarily in Moses' case, trying to get to the promised land. But, you know, we saw this through Turkey, through Greek Isles, through Italy, going into Europe and with the ISIS influx into Syria. And they came across the border into Jordan, where I was, and there were 70,000 people in a camp because Jordan wouldn't let them come into the country. In this case, we go back to 1960s in the Cloward-Piven doctrine, which was to create or to never let a good crisis go to waste. So that's kind of where this is falling under, because it does overwhelm systems, but it also can be used to change voting records. I definitely can see that. And I'll tell you that the fact, you know, the fact witness that I am, you know, Seals versus Lloyd Austin in multiple cases, Roberts v. Austin, as a fact witness, I'll tell you facts. The 17,000 Haitians that showed up, the first plane that was supposed to take them back to Haiti left out of Laughlin Air Force Base in Del Rio. You know, not an Air Force plane, but a white plane with a November marking on it. So it's a U.S. plane. And it didn't fly, because you can follow the numbers. It did not fly to Haiti. It flew to Nashville. And so that was the first plane. Now, we had too much work to do, but I sent a couple of my guys to look at and see where they were going. And that's where they went. And others got on buses, of which one bus was overtaken by the occupants, and they disappeared into the periphery of, you know, South Texas. Many of them were rolled up. So these are, you know, especially in that group that we had, they were pretty rough. You know, the first ones we put on planes and buses, we were trying to disperse the crowd, take out the loud ones, and get them on, you know, on their way back to what we thought would be Haiti, as Mr. Mayorkas told us he would. But they didn't go there. And that's just a fact. You know, there's no political, you know, punching here. It's just, that's fact. And so that's really, now I have to look at that and think, in my military mindset, most dangerous course of action. Well, if you put these people in the cities, be it blue or red, you create a chaotic environment. And in chaos, there again ensues the seams and gaps, which allow for nefarious actors to, it's a playground for them.
Right. Yeah. So when all of this is playing out, I mean, I want to make sure that folks know that they can support you. And on your website, when they go there, they can see that there's a give, send, go on your website, because you need help. And so can you explain this? Instead of me reading this, just how this all works.
Oh yeah, I'll just explain it, and folks can read it. You know, that's actually my horse Bandit. He's from the border, and I've got him back down there now. But I'm up in Central Texas right now. But honestly, the idea came from Ann Vandersteel. We just happened to be talking about it, and I was saying, you know, I'm running out of funds, Ann, and she said, well, let's just do this. So she set it up with me. We did a give, send, go, and I did. You know, I don't feel right asking for stuff, but. You know, the only way to get things going is intelligence drives operations, but logistics drives all of it.
Right.
And logistics is, you know, in the unconventional warfare world, the auxiliary is what supports you so you can run operations. And so, you know, we got to do that. And so we set the number high. We knew that it was going to be some time. You know, if I can get a contract doing this, I would, and I wouldn't have to do that. But it has been a blessing. The AGs came down. We had a fundraiser a couple weeks ago. Those kind of things, when it comes in increments of $20, a lot of 17s, believe it or not, I get a lot of $17, that number there, which is awesome. I get 45s, you know, see a lot of 45s. Look, that's we the people. When the money comes like that, I don't want some rich guy with strings attached telling me, I want you to do this for me, Doc. I want you to do that. Come and secure my oil wells. I don't want that. What I want is we the people to feel like they're a part of something. You know, I might be at the tip of the spear, but the spear has a lot of parts to it. And that's why I feel like when I send a thank you out to somebody, you know, they're shocked that I, you know, I sometimes can sit down and write them. But, you know, that's important, because without that, it's still going to happen. Look, I'll still be down there. It's just, I will be eating pork and beans instead of Whataburger.
Anyway, sorry about that. I have to pull myself back in here, okay. But, I noticed that you're in a lot of speaking events also, and yeah. you played out here when I went through social media and just kind of typed in your name. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you're fighting for the folks in the military who received the jabs, if I remember right.
Yes, and, sir.
I'm going to play this clip real quick.
Department of Justice said, well, actually, you know, the data was glitched, and so the current data shows it's only a 6% rise or something ridiculous. And I said, well, it's 100% for me. And excuse me? I said, well, that's the diagnosis I got. And for every one of us, I'm going to give you a few of the cases. Chest pain, unspecified. Are you ready? 15X rise, 1,529% increase. Mm. Dyspnea, shortness of breath, 905% increase, 9X rise. Acute myocardial infarction, 269% increase. Acute pericarditis, 175% increase. January to November 2001. It's not very much time. It was checked over. Acute myocarditis, 285% increase. Pulmonary embolism, 467% increase. Cerebral infarction, 393% increase. Remember that family I told you about, that soldier? That's what he had. Bell's palsy, 319%. DIC, disseminated intravascular coagulation, 1,175% increase. Guillain-Barré syndrome, 250%.
So you continue to go through all of these, and mm-hmm. folks have posted this video, and I noticed it also. I don't know if you know this, but it's been translated in different languages. It's been shared. I don't know if you knew that. I said, man, this is making its ways. But you're not only helping folks on the border, you're active in so many other ways. And man, really appreciate the, but you know, we talk about all the time, what are folks doing to make a difference? What has God called you to do in your life out there? And I tell folks, hey, if you post information, if you translate and post on social media, you can pray. I mean, there's all different ways that you can support. This border issue is a very big one, and you're also supporting the military. And I just, man, kudos to you for that. It's amazing.
It's, you know, it's my family. I may not be in uniform still, but they're still my family. My son's going in, you know, in a couple months. So, yeah.
And where's, what branch is he going in?
He wants to be a Green Beret like Dad. I'm like, son, you're way too smart for all that. You need to go in. But I respect what he wants to do. You know, that's okay.
Green Berets. Is it tough to get into Green Berets? I mean, can you just join the Army and then jump right into Green Berets?
And there are cases that can do that, and this college degree helps, and a little bit older, more mature. It's a 18 X-ray program. It's, you know, not too many of them make it, but it's very competitive, obviously. Typically, right. You get the older guys like me that got some experience under your belt first. That's how I did it.
Yeah. In 39 years, that's a combination of active duty and
Guard and reserves.
Wow.
Right.
That's just powerful.
I thought that, you know, after 9/11, I came back inactive, and I thought, well, we'll go down range. It'll be over quick. And then 20 years later, I'm getting a retirement.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just this part right here. I wanted to show you another thing. You have a call to action, mm-hmm. a mission statement. Without reading this, what is your call to action to everyone out there?
Well, I always start it with the call to action that William Barrett Travis gave from the walls of the Alamo to you know, Sam Houston, saying, "Fellow citizens and compatriots, we're besieged on all sides by an army." You know, under that time, under Santa Anna, I just say, that were besieged on all sides by tyranny. And then, of course, rulers of darkness, powers, principalities, things that you can't see, but we know are very real. And to me, this is saying, hey, come to our aid with all dispatch. And that's quoting Travis there. Otherwise, we are prepared to essentially, like a soldier, what is, you know, due to his honor, to, you know, to be on this wall until our last breath, to general order number one, stand our post until properly relieved, and guard everything within the limits of our post, to include the disenfranchised, the oppressed, the lesser fortunate. That's what Green Berets do. And I take off the hat and I can take off the uniform, but I can't take off of what Deo Presso Liber, our motto, to free the oppressed. I can't get rid of that. I can't, you know, take off that uniform and put on my Ephesians 6 armor and not adhere to what I'm called to do for a moment such as this, if you will. Regardless of what, look, anytime you tell the truth or you do something, you stand in the gap, there's a price. And sometimes that price results in physical harm or requirement is moral courage. And moral courage ends up in ridicule or possibly being thought of as a, you know, a nut job. You know, why don't you just retire and go to the ranch, Pete, and raise some cattle? Well, because there's a war going on and it's just south of me.
And that war, I think that's also interesting that you bring in, that we fight against principalities and powers unseen. Mm-hmm. Any experience in that realm when you're dealing with all of this, especially in the border side?
Absolutely. I remember the first time I physically saw evil, and that was coming in from Kuwait to Baghdad in a pretty fierce situation that we went through with our guys. And, you know, me being a former infantry guy, I was very comfortable on a 50 caliber. So I was up there and wasn't in really in a fight, but just going through the street and seeing some eyes and just some hatred. I saw evil looking at me, but then I saw fear and what evil does to people and causing that fear. I've seen the same thing down here. The eyes tell it all. I can see it. It's a discernment thing, and it's a gift of the spirit, and I can't unsee evil, but I can't unsee good. I can't, you know, light just, you know, darkness can't hide. And so that's why, to me, this is so in the realm of spiritual warfare. You know, that's just when people talk about fifth generation warfare. Well, I read a book and now I know what fifth generation warfare is. Well, that's like 25% of this fight. 75% of it, to me, is in the principalities realm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then remember, just briefly, when you talk about the eyes, whenever the tsunami hit, I believe it was 2004 at the end of that year, I was one of the first, along with another Marine, flew in to Utapao, Thailand. We were dropped off about 2 or 3 in the morning, and then the plane took off and left us there. We had no idea who to talk to, where to go. But bottom line is, when everybody started flying in, we were one of the first planes into Mindanao in Indonesia. Yeah. And we dropped off 5,000 body bags. And there was a Marine out there, a Marine captain. He came from, I guess, a consulate, and he was there in case people needed their passport stamped to get in and out of that area. And we flew back into the main airport where all of these supplies and food were being flown in and people. One thing I'll never forget is, as these folks were coming off of the plane, one of them from a Japan plane that, you know, flew in and picked folks up, I usually do magic tricks with children. And when the children were walking towards me in line, they weren't looking left, right. They were looking straight, and they were almost as if zombies. And I saw in their eyes, and I went to grab my magic trick ring, and I just put it right back on and just hit my gut. And I just, tears were flowing. And I said, I can see in their eyes, they've seen stuff that just devastating, just powerful, the evil that they had seen come across and destroy their families. And the amount of death they probably saw was unbearable. And that was a big one for me.
And that's, you know, that's a good point, because that reminds me of some of the, you know, the kids coming across now and some of the young women that have been accosted along the way in their path from the Darien Gap all the way to the border. Some of these young women coming across pregnant, you know, teenage girls, 13, 14, 15, and the look in their eyes of just despair. What's going to happen to me now? What does my future look like? You know, this is a humanitarian crisis like nothing we've ever seen in continental United States. And like I say, there's nothing humanitarian about it, because trying to control or trying to place all these people into places that are safe is virtually impossible at this point. I'm not giving up. You know, glass is always half full for me, but it's we, the people, that are going to do this. And that's why I don't give up, because I know that. I know that the American character and spirit is still alive. People like to be comfortable, and I got it, but we're going to have to get a little uncomfortable once in a while to help out.
Yeah. So folks can reach out to you again, drpetechambers.com. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. drpetechambers.com. Doctor.
Okay. And so, if folks wanted to come and help you out, do you advise that they do? Do you say, yeah, come on down and we help you out? Or is it more, what kind of support are you really looking for?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Hit me up on the website. There's a contact page there, and it'll get screened, and somebody will get a hold of me, and I'll see, is it somebody that can actually help? Because it's not that, you know, the requirements for me are not massive right now. I'm just a small detachment, if you will. But this detachment will grow. I believe that. I know that we're being blessed in this. It will happen, but I just wouldn't be able to do much to place everybody. But there are certain key type personnel that if it struck, you know, my mind as to how I could place that, I would take it in a heartbeat. It's just that, you know, just having folks, you know, I've got to take care of them. I can't do that just yet. But yeah, in time we will. I believe that. I think it's going to be we the great people across this border. I really do.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right, anything that we can pray about for you at this time?
You know, just for discernment. Honestly, discernment is my key right now. It's just knowing who I'm dealing with, when I'm dealing with it. There are nefarious actors that are down there, both internal to the government and external to the government, that want to stand in the way or have tried to. They haven't done anything to me, but I just. It's just the discernment to know who's a friend and who's not. That's really where I'm at. I've got the energy. I'm on fire. I'm ready to go. So, you know, that I take those prayers any day, but really just that discernment.
Perfect. All right. And that we'll close in prayer, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Heavenly Father, thank you once again for all that you do in and through us. And we lift up Doc to you, Dr. Pete Chambers. How amazing it is that you've used his life for almost 40 years in service to our country in uniform, almost similar to what we think of as Moses in the desert, herding those sheep, preparing the way for all the things that you're going to do in and through him to touch the many folks that need support and help on our border, still in the military, and more. And just as he asked for the discernment, how difficult it is to tell who's right and who's wrong and who's really with us and not. And we just continue to overflow him with the ability to have just laser eyes and ears and the mind to know exactly at that moment, not waste any time, who's right and who's wrong. We know that you're guiding and directing him and all those around him. And we ask for continued protection as he's on the front lines of this battle. Again, we thank you for all you do in and through us. For it's in the name of Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen.
I'll take that in Jesus' name.
Amen. All right, brother. We'll hope to talk to you again soon. We'll keep Absolutely. This up, get updates and more. I'd love that.
I'll send them if I find something interesting.
All right. God bless.